Hello and welcome to another frightfully good episode of Cam Fu and Friends, the show where we openly discuss entertainment in all its forms. We give you news, our opinions, and our views on things like movies, TV shows, music, video games, and more. That way, if you have the same taste as someone on the show, hopefully you'll discover something new and you can judge whether or not you'll like something for yourself. This month's episode, our discussion topic is horror films, specifically our favorites.
Double R.
I am your host, Cam Fu, movie aficionado and overall general pop culture fan. Thank you for tuning in today. This show would not be possible if it wasn't for my friends, so let me introduce my first guest host for this episode. After taking a one-episode break, Andrew is back in the studio.
It's good to be back.
Welcome back, Andrew.
Yeah. That was a nice break. I gotta say, it felt like a nice vacation away from the world of Cam Fu, but here I am back, so give it my all. Let's see what happens.
What did you think of the last episode, the Harry Potter
episode? I enjoyed all 4 hours of it. I like the Harry Potter movies. My only issue is that you didn't mention the greatest character in the entire series.
And who's that?
Buckbeak! He was the star. He was the star. He's a fantastic, noble creature and my personal favorite, so... Whatever.
I should let the listeners know that you walk around the building randomly yelling Buckbeak every once in a while. So makes sense, I guess.
Gotta love him.
My second guest host for today was on the second episode of Cam Fu and Friends. He's a big fan of horror films, which is why I've asked him on the show again today. I want to welcome back Brad to Cam Fu and Friends. Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you. It's so good to be back.
You know, I think I realized later on that I didn't let you explain what you did here at work. I'm not going to say where we work just because I like to keep that separate.
Sure, sure.
But why don't you tell everyone what you do?
Well, short story is I am a stage manager. So I am a production specialist running the day-to-day for all stage production in our facility, as well as a consult and just general support for all production.
Very cool. Stage man. Yes. The main man for the stages.
Clean
yes.
stages.
They do say that.
And they are very nice. They are very
Thank
nice.
Thank you.
Who are they? What?
Stages are hard.
The stages are nice.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. Brad's awesome.
My third guest host for today is a newcomer to the podcast. He is another coworker and friend of mine. Hey, we're all coworkers on the
show. There's a theme here.
There's a theme. It's nice.
Co-work.
Anyway, he is knowledgeable in video compression, and he's an IT engineer as well. He's also heading up some important digital signage stuff, which is a pretty neat little realm if you ever have the chance to research it. He's also a big fan of horror movies. I want to welcome Dano to Cam Fu and Friends. Welcome to the show, Dano.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Glad to have you.
I do like horror films.
Yes. And so we should talk about... something related to that, something that you and Brad are both working on together, and you've done so in the past, what is it, 3 years now? Four?
About 4 years for myself.
Yeah, this is my third year.
Very cool.
Yes.
And this that we're talking about is the Stalker Farms Field of Screams.
That's right.
You guys want to, one of you want to talk about this for a little bit and what your involvements are?
Yeah. So Dan here, Stalker Farms, we recently had a name change. So this year we are Stalker Farms. Does a little play on the stalk in terms of corn. Get it?
Yes.
And the creepy
I do. I get it.
Creepy guy stalking. we were Field of Screams. Realized that, you know, Pennsylvania and a lot of other haunts are also called Field of Screams. So we realized that was just kind of a weird branding issue. So, but I've been involved with this haunt since 07. Where I showed up dressed as a crazy farmer to audition for the part. And I wasn't really dressed up. It was myself pretending to be a farmer. Hobbled in. And since then, became part of the core team, and I'm actually in charge of marketing for this attraction.
And how big is the attraction? Like, I think it's one of the biggest in the Northwest, or...
You know, I don't have stats for other haunts in the Pacific Northwest.
In that case, it's the biggest.
It would,
yes, the
it
best.
It is the biggest. Well, in terms of out, you know, what's unique is this is an outdoor haunted house. So it's in 1 acre of corn. So that's pretty big.
Yeah.
That's
corn is always interesting.
Children
one acre.
Corn, baby.
Yep. So it's in real corn, and it's sets and scenes and actors and actresses planted amongst the corn. And so you wander through it at your own pace and get scared and laugh and cry and pee, and hopefully in that order. And there's, you know, the ubiquitous chainsaw as well as scarecrows. So that's our theme. Other haunts are typically indoor, and they well, they're indoor. They're kind of garage haunts. They're warehouses, and that's their deal. We're outdoor, so we're pretty big. This year, we split the haunt into two. We actually offer two haunts, the Last Laugh, which is a miniature clown-themed haunt, more of a fun haunt. And then we have our traditional Field of Screams, which deals with the slasher family and all those creepy things, like I already said, the chainsaws and scarecrows.
Very cool. Now, I've personally never been yet. I plan on going this year. And I've always heard that the production value is just amazing, like over the top amazing. You guys hire, you cast your people. There's no just, hey, I'm interested in doing it. You actually go through auditions and cast people for roles. You hire people for professional sound design. I mean, it's just way professional, like just really well done. Andrew, you've gone before.
I have. I went last year.
What did you think?
I thought it was great. It was really cool. It's a great experience. It's creepy. It's, it's extremely well done. I don't get scared too easily. I get startled. So there was some of those things. Yep. It could be Mickey Mouse at the door, and he'd startle me if I didn't know he was coming over. But
that's right.
It's really well done. It's very expansive, big experience, good time. And, it was all creepy and rainy when I went to, and I got all muddy, and it was great.
Like I said, I plan on going up this year and checking it out. When do you guys open this year?
This year we open October 7th. And then we run every Thursday, Friday, Saturday throughout the rest of October. And we also traditionally, as tradition, open on Halloween night. And so people are welcome to dress in their funny costumes. And actually, nice. That's great because we get to make fun of all these.
Oh, you're dressed as a bunny. How cute.
Very cool.
Awesome.
We have a special contest giveaway that we would like to do with our listeners today. We are going to give you a trivia question right now, and what you have to do is comment on what you think the answer is.
Buckbeak.
And you can comment on either camfooandfriends.com or on the podcast embedded player on soundcloud.com. Post your answer, and your name will be put into a pool, a drawing, and we will draw a winner.
A pool of blood.
Pool of blood, yeah.
A pool of blood. We will pick.
Cauldron.
We will pick a person, and that person will win two free tickets to the Field of Screams at Stalker Farms, a really, really great prize. Technically, the winner of this contest will save $40 on tickets to the haunt. So really cool stuff, and we really appreciate this. This is the first contest on the show. So let's get to the trivia question. Dano, why don't you take it away?
All right. So horror-themed, obviously, but here is the question for you listeners out there. Christian evangelist Billy Graham claimed an actual demon was living in the celluloid reels of this movie.
Oh, I got a guess.
You guys think you know?
Pinocchio.
It's not Harry Potter either.
Oh, it's too obvious.
All right. Well, again, submit your answers in the comments section on our website, camfooandfriends.com or on soundcloud.com. The drawing will take place on October 14th, and we will announce the winner on Twitter and Facebook and notify them via email or private message. So definitely participate. All right, let's get this show started. To give the listeners an idea of what our guest hosts enjoy, I like for my newcomers to tell us what their top five favorite
movies
are.
Did you say cucumbers?
Cucumbers, yes.
Oh, okay, that's what I thought I heard.
So let's start with movies.
Movies!
All right, so Brad, you actually have not been on the show since we started doing the whole top five favorite films of all time thing.
Sure.
We started that in episode 3. Mm-hmm. So we want to hear your top five.
So rounding out the top five is Guillermo del Toro's Pan's Labyrinth.
Nice.
Very great movie.
This is a flex spot but definitely one of the last films that truly had an impact on me seeing it and was, you know, something new and really kind of redefined film and cinema, I thought, in a lot of ways, mostly around storytelling.
Yeah,
totally.
Great movie.
Visually and just everything about it was just airtight and just amazing story. So coming in number four is Martin Scorsese's Goodfellas.
Wow. Very good movie.
I am a huge fan of gangster flicks, especially when they don't hold punches. And nice. That's from camera work to story to characters, casting, you name it. It's a great genre of film, gangster and just those.
There's just some directors, everything they make is good.
I know. I mean,
and there's some better than others, but everything that's never terrible.
I much prefer his take on gangster films than his other work, to be honest.
I forgot. So, did he do Shutter Island? I forgot.
He did, yes.
See, I love that. I thought that was a great
definitely
movie.
Good, but I still see him as the Goodfellas, Casino, Raging Bull. Those to me are more. Those are more of his nature rather than his post, billionaire, big budget.
Yeah, films. I would agree with that, and I think that Goodfellas is definitely my favorite Martin Scorsese film.
Yeah,
he has a film coming out, I think, this December. It's kind of his first like family kind of kids.
That's
movie.
Right. Uh-oh. Yeah,
and it's
is it animated or
no? It's not animated.
Action?
It's live action. Okay. I know. Oh, what's her name? Chloe Moretz. The girl from Kick-Ass and Juno.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
She's in the film. The movie is called Hugo. And I know he deployed, he really used a lot of 3D in this movie. And he's kind of standing behind that technology. And so I'm really curious to see how a great director like him will work with 3D.
Yeah. I see him way less of a gimmick guy and more of a contextual, just an old school, director. But so definitely that's one of my all-time favorites.
Cool.
And number three, my favorite Coen Brothers film, and I think on everyone's probably top 10 list at least, The Big Lebowski.
Yes.
Nice.
I've probably seen that well over 100 times.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Definitely something I can put on and drink a couple beers to.
Absolutely.
And have the same amount of laughs every time. And I don't think I go through a day without quoting or having quoted to me a line from that movie. So it's just definitely one of the biggest cult classics. And number two is the original Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Wow.
Nice.
And I'm surprised it's not number one, but it might be on other lists.
I've never seen it. Seen it.
I bet we'll hear about it again.
I've never seen it.
Wow.
The original.
Yeah, I should go now.
Never seen the original.
No.
I'll maybe get into more detail later, but I think it's everyone has seen it who is
who's the director? Is it Tobe Hooper?
Tobe Hooper?
Yeah.
Yep.
Toby Hooper?
I don't know why
Tobe
I know that, and I've never seen it.
Toby Hooper.
Great, just the style, the documentary.
Did he go on to make any other successful?
I don't believe.
Texas Chainsaw 2.
Yeah. And then.
Well, I said successful.
Oh, I hear that.
So anyway, I think that goes without saying. That's a classic.
Wow.
And then number one is a combo, Godfather 1 and 2.
Nice.
And not 3?
Not 3.
Yeah, generally 3.
I'm waiting for Godfather 4 in 3D. That's going to be awesome.
Yes. And
the HBO special.
3D oranges everywhere.
And again, being, 40 years old, I'm sure most people understand why that's an amazing
film. If you had
You're
to
not
pick,
40 years old.
The film is, though.
Oh.
If you had to pick between watching Godfather 1 or Godfather 2, and you could only watch one for the rest of your life and you can never watch the other, which one would you pick?
It would be number one.
Yeah.
See, for me, it would be number two.
Really?
I like Godfather 2 a lot more. Mm.
I do like it better, but I guess, assuming I had the context of one, maybe two, but if I had never seen either of them, there's a lot of context you would miss in the second
one. You think so?
Which really adds more to the story.
I don't think so. I think two could stand alone.
Well, when you understand the evolution of Michael Corleone from the first film, it just adds so much more context to how he came to be a gangster.
Sort of, I guess. But I feel like Robert De Niro's performance just kind of gives you enough to work with.
I would honestly, if I had my druthers, I'd rather they put it in chronological order and got the chance to watch it that way. But
remix.
Godfather
3. Yeah,
it's on YouTube.
Godfather Remix. Let's do it.
3D Godfather.
All right. Well, great list, Brad. Thank you very much.
Thank
Dano,
you.
Let's move to you.
Monster
what,
Man.
What are your top five favorite films of all time?
Oh, you know, that's a trick question.
Legally Blonde.
Yes, it is. Legally.
How'd you know?
Dances with Wolves.
Yeah.
Ghost.
Yeah, that's a good movie. Yeah.
Ghost count? Is that... Yeah. Flashdance.
Is Ghost a horror movie?
None of those count.
No. The name itself implies that it is. But
did it horrify you?
It did horrify me.
Yeah. You know, it's funny, Ghost. There are, if you take out a lot of the love elements in the relationship in that movie, and you just brought up the
and
concept,
yeah.
and you get rid of Whoopi.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Please.
The thematic, the backstory and the theme actually is really frightening.
I think,
really?
Didn't someone on YouTube do like an edit? Where they made Ghost look like an actually scary movie.
They more than likely did.
I think it's out there. If it is, I'll link to
so
it at the bottom.
So they must have left
it
in the ceramic scene?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, one of my favorite mashups, though, or redos or whatever you call those, whatever the meme is for that, but is the Groundhog Day. They took the movie Groundhog Day with Bill Murray and made that into a horror movie trailer, and it's absolutely brilliant.
Nice.
So, but, you know, no, none of those are on my list. So I'm all over the board. My favorite's a funny term because there's movies that I love, but I'm not ever going to go like watch those again. And so I like to think of favorite in terms of I'm going to watch this again, either to relax or to enjoy or to pick up other, you know, subtle elements that I missed before. So, with that, number five is Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
My favorite.
So it's one of those ones that just, I don't know. It's a, you know. All right, so number four is The Big Lebowski.
Synergy.
Right.
Yeah, and I didn't know Brad had that
on. I've got to watch that again. I've seen it, and I liked it. But
yeah, I saw it the first time, and I'm like, well, this is good. And then it kind of grew on me, you know, kind of went back and watched it and some of the lines and the plot. And it's one of those movies that I can – you could just – you know, it has that fan base. It's that cult.
Yep.
Whatever, right? You just put it in and it's just funny every time you watch it over and over again.
It's kind of like when I first saw Napoleon Dynamite, I was like, I don't even know what I'm watching. This is stupid. And then it kind of just grew on me. And now it's kind of like it's kind of funny to me.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, if Napoleon, I didn't put that one down. No. so cool. Number three is Trick or Treat. A recent horror movie.
Oh, I thought you were talking about that
from
the 80s.
It's Trick-er-Treat. It's an anthology movie, and it crept up on me. I wasn't sure what to expect, but it reminded me of the Creepshow days of horror anthologies. And it's one that I like to kind of traditionally now watch for Halloween because there's so much subtle detail throughout the pieces that you just pick it up every time you watch it. I think a true, you know, every shot in a movie should have some sort of subtext and meaning and build to the story and not just be there for the sake of it. And this is one example of one of those movies that every shot, every scene has a purpose. And it's pretty rare in the horror genre especially. So, Trick or Treat. Recommend that one. The other one is The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Mm-hmm. Ooh.
Western.
Very cool.
Yeah, so I told you, I'm all over the board.
no, it's good.
That one, growing up and even today, I cannot get past the awesomeness of
that. Is that
the... Absolutely.
Oh, yeah.
Just the close-up shots, the epicness, the character building is, you know, just absolutely... It's one of those movies that I can put in every time and just pick up at any moment in the piece and while I'm doing dishes or running or whatever, right? And I just love it.
Awesome.
It's hard to say it's this top one, but this is another one that I like to put in. Both the wife and I would sit down and watch is another Coen Brothers, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Oh, I like that one.
Very cool.
Another one that I think was original, taking a piece from the Odyssey and putting mm-hmm. together. So having a mythology background from college and whatnot, it was great watching that and picking out, oh my God, that's the Cyclops, and oh, that's this, and you know, picking up all the pieces, but then it's just a great, funny story. I mean, it's another one of those things, typical Coen Brothers, where the lines are just great, you know, and
that's great.
Go forever. Yeah. You're just like, what? and then it has those, you know, a lot of stories tagging in with it that isn't pushed in your face like a lot of movies where it's social in front of you. It's just it's background story. So,
all right. Well, is that it?
Yeah.
Did we go through?
I went through. There's five.
Wow. Very good. That's great. Thank you for your list, guys. Let's move on to our discussion topic for today. Let's talk about horror films.
Horror.
With October and The Haunt and Halloween coming up, I thought it would be a great idea to discuss our favorite horror films of all time. This genre, of course, can kind of collide and morph with other genres. So not only do I think we're going to have an interesting mix of horror films we enjoy, but also a mix of opinion on what constitutes a movie to be, quote unquote, a horror film. Let's start with Andrew.
Uh-oh.
Andrew, what are some of your favorite horror films?
Deep Blue Sea.
Deep Blue Sea, that is
Bikini
an awesome movie.
Bottom Four.
Yeah, this is tough for me. It's not really my favorite genre, but I mean, I actually looking at some movies that I wasn't sure would be classified as horror films. Maybe it is one of my favorite genres. So these are probably movies that everybody has seen or will see. They're not obscure at all. So Mr. Mainstream is going to go with, I don't even know, I'm not even going to put these in order. One movie that freaked me out completely as a kid, and I saw it on TV, mm-hmm. and it was completely freaky, and I don't know that I've ever seen the real version of it is The Exorcist.
The Exorcist.
Yep.
Excellent choice.
Yeah. Yeah.
On TV, that would have been very edited.
Yeah, it was very edited. Yeah, but it was, it's freaky, man. I got to tell you, there's not too many movies where you go away and you go, probably is a devil, but that's one of them.
Yeah.
She's like levitating and.
Well, and you think back to that era when people were way more susceptible to believe the implications of that film as potential truth rather now that would be a little bit more, I think, it require more of a suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, you think?
Yeah, I think so. Mm. I think that was the reaction by the masses, that it was way more less fictional than it was, than, you know, being a fictional story. I think it rang true with some you know, God-fearing people.
I think it's sufficiently creepy.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
There's just something about an innocent little girl being turned into this creature that's like
spider walking down the stairs.
Yeah.
That's a total.
Yeah, there's something about the 70s that generated a series of just raw, original pieces of film that
absolutely.
You just don't find today now. That said, I think the 21st century has generated a lot of different and new take on horror film, obviously. And there's a lot of great horror films just in the last decade. But prior to that, the 70s, hands down, really generated just, you know, I Spit on Your Grave, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Jaws.
Now, what about The Omen? Do you like those?
The Omen, yeah.
The original one I thought was really creepy.
The first one is definitely
a
great, great film.
They were films that weren't there for shock value, but actually built suspense and built it and then, you know, slapped you across the side of the head. And that was one of those. I mean, that MRI sequence wasn't scary, but that was rough. To watch her in the MRI. I mean, it was just like, that wasn't even wasn't blood pouring out of that thing or anything, right? It was just scary. You're just like, what's going
on? See, I'm not a slasher. You guys, maybe I'm not. I don't like the cut 'em up kind of movies, but any kind of like really freaky.
I enjoy that stuff, but not in a lasting sense. It's all just guilty pleasure, experiential, just kind of in the moment.
I was
human nature to want to gawk at, you know,
yep.
Just gruesome
road accident. Let's take a look.
Yeah, exactly.
Through all the like the Nightmare on Elm Street series and all that when it came out, and
very popular.
Yeah. Let's see what else we have here. I got to go with one that I never saw until it came out on DVD, and it's The Descent. I think I mentioned it on the show before.
Yes. I like that.
It's a good one.
It scared the crap out of me.
Yeah,
and only because there's, you know, just that eerie. We're in the dark and we don't know what's there, and they never really show it. And then there's the one scene, and I don't want to spoil it, but it's the first time
you actually see
the creature. And dude, I freaking kicked the coffee table over. So that one was, I recommend that one if you're in, you know, like to jump out of the chair And let's see here. One of the ones I really liked was, I'm not a big vampire kind of guy, but
Twilight.
Which one?
I love Twilight.
Are you a werewolf or vampire?
You were horrified by Sparkling Edward.
There's the, I'm going to sound like an idiot here, but was it Coppola that did the Dracula?
Yes, Francis Ford Coppola.
Yeah, with Gary Oldman.
Yes.
Yeah, I think that movie's really cool.
Oh, it's brilliant.
I love the design. Great. I love that it's not the normal Dracula take. You know, he's got like a beehive hairdo when you first see him, and he's like 180 years old, and just his freaky accent.
And they did incorporate a little bit of the Vlad the Impaler background.
Yeah.
Which I thought was
super
really
cool.
Because that's something I've always been thrilled with.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I'm surprised, both my wife and I agree that I'm surprised they haven't made a full movie.
That's been on my list.
Yeah.
As soon as I win the lotto, I'm making a three-hour feature film of Vlad the Impaler.
Yeah, totally. I mean, that's creepy in itself. And there's a lot of historical movies that come out, and like, why hasn't anyone jumped on that?
This is copyright of that story idea, yeah. By the way.
We got some producers listening that story, can steal that.
Yeah, story idea by Brad and Dan.
Yeah, I saw that in theater. I thought it was really, really cool. Just a different look, a different take on the whole thing. And it had some parts that freaked me out. You know, when I forget her name, the redheaded girl, when they have to cut her head off.
Lucy.
And I just remember, yeah, Lucy.
Lucy.
And
he's
like,
yep.
You keep hearing, Mina. I like that too. I don't know why. And then like doesn't he turn into like a wolf and then a bat? And like he turns into a bunch of different things.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And the effects are trippy, and Anthony Hopkins, Sir Anthony.
Yes.
And they're rocking it.
Yeah.
It's a good one.
That was good.
Fava beans.
Here you go. Another one I'm going to date myself here, but I did see this in the theater, is 10 years before I was born, was Alien.
Very good choice.
The original Alien.
Yes.
Nice.
Did not know what I was getting into. I was probably 11 years old and freaking scared the crap out of me.
Totally.
Yes. Yeah.
When I was creating my list, that was on there and I had to cut it. So I'm glad you brought it up.
Oh,
that's that is in my honorable mention list. I'm glad you said it.
Maybe it's in my list.
Well, I loved sci-fi and you know, you're thinking, cool. And no one had done really a sci-fi horror movie.
Not at all.
And dude, when they're looking at the eggs and you can kind of see something moving around, and then when it opens up and you're like, man, I don't know. I probably shut my eyes.
What's amazing with that film, outside of that, it's a Scott film,
right?
You know, is that it was before CGI.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Way before.
I mean, that was pure
models,
hands down models and puppetry, and it's still gruesome.
Well, and it's the best kind of horror that you. The suspense is in what you can't see and what you don't know.
It's very subtle.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's the best kind. That plays your emotions way more than the
trapped
face.
Yeah, and that's why I like the first one more than the rest of the series.
Absolutely.
Because from two on, it just kind of took it into a more action
movie. And I don't understand why a lot of lists I've looked up, they seem to couple the two on occasion. And the one and two.
No, they're very different.
And I have no idea why, because the second one's great.
But yeah, I agree.
The first one was truly just an innovative film, and it really
and it's a heroine, right? You've got your hero.
Exactly.
I mean, this is again the 70s here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
A hero is Sigourney Weaver.
Yeah.
It's like, who would have thought
a young
it's a space film.
And she was borderline sexy then too.
Yeah,
yep.
And here you're thinking, okay, so we're gonna do a space film, and it's gonna be gory and no stormtroopers and laser fights, and people are gonna die, and the lead is a female.
Just about everybody's going to die except for her and Jonesy, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. It was a trip. It was a trip because you're thinking, I saw it and the, you know, the captain dies and just everybody.
Yeah.
And it's like, whoa, crazy. All right. One of my favorite movies, and I don't even know, I wouldn't have called it a horror movie, but I guess it is it involves a 25-footer. I think we all know what's coming up here. Gotta go with Jaws, man. I mean, no need to go over it. Everybody's seen it probably, but fantastic movie.
That fits horror, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Again, the
unknown.
The unknown.
But it can get you at any second. It's the same, whether it's under the water or in a cave.
Yeah.
It's like when I went to your haunt and I walked through the smoke.
Yeah.
And I hadn't been at all. I had no idea what was happening. That probably scared me more than anything.
Yep.
Because I was like, who's coming at me? Who's coming at me?
Yeah.
Who's coming at me? You go first. Push my girlfriend ahead of me. You go first. You take the hit, and then I'll take him down.
So I heard, I don't know if this is true, but when that movie, after it was released, like, beaches were less populated?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
They were? Well,
without question.
Yeah.
I think that was...
I don't think the Maine Tourism Convention Bureau was very happy with...
I'm sure they weren't.
So is that movie the reason that your greatest fear is sharks?
I think it probably ties into it, yeah.
Really?
It probably does.
Dude, we're bros, man. That's my fear. I grew up, and I live around lakes in the Puget Sound, and I've always been deathly afraid of
They've infiltrated fish. Lakes now. Because shark,
oh yeah,
shark night.
No, I was in Hawaii.
That's right.
They're in fresh water
fresh
now.
Water, yeah.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Take
and
your
in
pick.
3D, by the way.
And in 3D.
Yeah,
the other.
No, I was in Hawaii and I struggled with snorkeling out in the middle of this ocean.
Oh yeah,
and,
I was the same thing.
And it was worried because they had these guys as guards, and I'm like, why are you guys guarding us if this is safe? Sharks. Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not going in that damn water.
Especially when you're underwater and you have a mask on and your peripheral vision is nothing.
See 2 feet. I'm like, I saw that scene in Jaws.
The last thing you're going to see is a set of teeth.
Big eye.
Can you imagine what would have happened if the shark had actually worked mechanically?
It would have ruined it.
I think it would have.
Yeah, I agree.
I think it's without question it would have ruined it, but or at least would have ruined the same the experience as it was, but...
Nice.
Yeah, great film.
Yeah, so again, those are probably my top five. I have some honorable mentions. I'll just throw them out here if you've seen them or not, because I like them. Emily Rose, I thought was sufficiently
good one.
Creepy.
Cool.
Yep.
The Omen, which we talked about already.
Yep.
The first one, great.
Yes.
There was a made-for-TV movie. I don't know if you guys have seen this, Salem's Lot, Stephen King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something about...
It's on a lot of lists.
Yeah.
It is.
Mm-hmm. The vampires, I don't know, and maybe not as a whole, it's not great, just like It he made, which was creepy the first half and sucked the second half, but there's some scenes where they walk in and the guy's a vampire and he's like in the rocking chair and his eyes are glowing and it's just, it's just chills. Jeepers Creepers,
it's
which I never knew anything about. I saw it and I was like, well, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
It's kind of creepy.
Yeah. That's a good cornfield.
And then here's a few that I saw that are old and I don't really think hold up anymore. Poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
Initially scared me.
Yeah.
Don't dig it anymore. Fright Night.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Can't stand it.
Sure.
The Howling.
Yeah.
I don't think it holds up anymore.
Yeah, you're right.
It's hard.
And then one I really like, which they're remaking, which I'm anxious to see, is The Thing.
Yes. I'm excited to see The Thing.
I saw that in my later years, and that I was surprised I hadn't seen it before.
That was my first venture into horror films.
Really?
I was 8.
Girl.
Awesome. Oh.
Yeah,
my mom is a huge horror fan, horror fan and sci-fi fan. And so she, you know, we would go to the Video People Video VHS rental place and rent the $30 copy of that Betamax. And she'd said, hey, I've got a sci-fi movie. It's in Antarctica. Oh, cool. Have a seat. Oh, look at that doggy. I'm not sure. You know, my mom's sitting there and I'm sitting there and then like, what's wrong with that dog? It doesn't look sick. And he was like,
his face just split apart.
Yeah, his face split apart. Yeah, I was traumatized after that for quite some time.
Awesome.
So, yeah, now I try to bring that vengeance back on all of our guests at the haunt now. So,
yes.
There you go.
So the new one comes out soon. It stars Mary Elizabeth Winstead, who played Ramona Flowers on Scott Pilgrim versus
Cameron's
the World.
Favorite.
Yes, yes. It's great.
Pretty girl.
I don't know who else is in that film. I think the rest of them are kind of no-namers, but...
Scott Baio.
Oh, Kurt Russell's in it, isn't he?
Kurt Russell.
Is he in it?
Not in the new one.
No.
Yeah, no.
I'm just being hopeful.
Okay. Maybe he'll make a cameo.
Yeah,
sure.
We found his body.
Nice. All right.
That's all I got for you.
Cool.
Oh, and the Others, which is
Others.
Hard.
Yeah, that was good.
I like that, too.
I was pleasantly surprised.
Yeah.
I had low expectations, and they were exceeded.
So yeah. Mm-hmm.
Definitely.
There you go.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. All right, Dano, let's hear what your top five favorite horror films are.
Sure. This is really hard, but, you know, when in the scheme of things, I think I'm a classicist. Classicist? Is that a word?
It works for me.
Classicist?
I'm a classicist.
I'm a masochist classicist.
Masochist is a word.
That is a word. All right, so this was mentioned, but number five is Alien.
Yeah.
I saw that again as a child.
Daniel's number five.
Why is they don't look, he looks sick and black. You know, that little creature coming out. I mean, just.
That little bastard grows up quick, too.
It does. Yeah. And I'm amazed, you know, I think that's every one of the nice things is that it takes a spin on the horror of pregnancy. There's like a pregnancy subtle tone in the whole thing.
Yeah,
right? This thing is buried in your gut, and this thing comes out, and it works on guys and women.
How did he get in there? He went like through your mouth.
Yeah,
right?
And it's like get it
your
off.
Face.
You know, it's.
Sick.
I just think it's timeless. The claustrophobia, the sweating, it just is amazing. And it's still this unknown creature. It's not like a Schwarzenegger film where it's like, it bleeds, it must die, right? Mm. You just kind of, I think that the fear of the unknown, right? It's just one of those things. And you're like, what is this? And they never really explain. It doesn't like they fly back in time and go, well, the alien was born on planet X.
Right.
Yeah.
It has an acid body. You don't know. You're like, what is this?
Chapels.
I think I forgot to mention that one of the things that stuck with me for that movie was the sound of the alarm in the spaceship.
Yeah.
It's not it's very, like, kind of quiet.
Subtle.
Eerie. And when she's just, like, walking in the ship very slowly, you know, not sure what's behind each corner, just that constant sound is creepy.
Yeah.
And when the DVD came out, my dad bought it, and we watched it. And on the DVD menu, it's basically inside the ship, and it has that siren. It has the flashing light going around and that alarm going off.
Yeah.
And I'm just like, ooh.
You're on the edge.
It just creeps me out.
Yeah. It's and actually, that speaking of that, sound is a very big theme in all of the top five movies that I have. I've noticed that sound has this – they all have a similar theme. So number four has been mentioned already, Jaws.
Yeah.
That was a toss-up between The Shining – but I went with Jaws because that really did affect me and scare me, and I'm still affected by it. So, as is a lot
of folks.
Man.
They got them. Don't
so
worry. Got them.
And they had number four and number five. And number three was mentioned already, The Exorcist.
Yes.
Again, another subtle sound piece. There's a lot of pieces in that film where it slowly builds. And in a recent movie that parallels that?
Got some new words.
New words.
Parallel.
Yeah. You're not even drinking. You're the only one not having beer.
Yeah. I know. It's the water. It's like gremlins. You guys gave me water.
Well, I like gremlins.
Gave me water.
Someone
Gizmo.
Paranormal Activity. Another movie I actually didn't think I'd enjoy, but I really did because, nothing happened in the first 50 minutes of the film, but it was subtle.
She kept going, Micah.
It built, and
it did build.
It built and built, and then there was just, it had this, and I couldn't get past this is Exorcist, right? It just had that feel, so kept thinking, well, this is Exorcist. But The Exorcist had a lot of shots of images. There's a lot of cutaways to creepy images that you dealt with, and then the story of the priest, him fighting his faith and fighting the demon and everything, right? And
that's a good demon.
That was a demon. The demon.
So you said Paranormal Activity was number two?
No. I said
I just bring it in as a.
I brought it in as an example.
Because I really want to know. The ending is always a debate on that, but we can get into that another time.
Well, because there's different endings.
Well, yes, and I had very, very polarizing views on one versus the other.
Mm-hmm.
They're very different, yeah.
And I thought one ruined and one sold the movie to me.
I think I just watched the theatrical version is the one I remember. I try to stay away from the other versions because that is like, well, I want to talk to what everyone else has seen versus what someone saw on a special DVD because they were an Amazon subscriber or whatever, right?
Yes.
So number two, and this was hard. This is all. Number two was John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yep. Oh, that's right.
Another one that.
Wrong sound effect.
Yeah.
Yeah, wrong.
It was awesome, though. That was on HBO when we first got cable. It scared the shit.
So, another one I saw as a kid that introduced me.
Wait. Yeah. One point, Halloween. Who's the mask based on? The mask that
was going to be a trivia, but that I know.
Oh, shit. Forget it.
No, that's not the trivia.
That's not
the trivia. So
it's
not the trivia,
but based on William Shatner.
That's right. It's William Shatner.
Right? It's a William Shatner mask.
It is. The prop department didn't have any money. I think they even talked to Don Post, and they wanted to do Don Post special effects masks, and they couldn't afford it. So they ran out to a costume store and bought a William Shatner mask, and then they spray painted it and messed with the hair and cut out the eye holes, and that was their mask.
There
and
you go.
Pretty creepy.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Bill.
I mean, they didn't really need to do that. It still would have been creepy.
Yeah.
But
I had a lot of trivia about that movie. and part of it was the rhythm. So again, the music in that piece was very. It wasn't a typical John Williams score. It was bum 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 bum. You know, it was.
That's a scary theme.
It is a scary theme.
Yeah.
It was very, you know. You know, had this little.
Well, it's tune. Simplistic.
It's 5/4, right? It's John, a 5/4 rhythm that yeah. just,
John Carpenter did the music. If I
he did,
recall,
he did. He learned the rhythm from his father, I guess, or something. Anyway, that was very unsettling through the whole piece, right? So another piece where you just had leaves blowing down the street and you had this happy moment, but you knew there was something foreboding happening, you know, something yeah. foreshadowing was coming in evil. And
Jamie Lee's in that too, if I recall.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She is.
Right.
And then she came back for H2O.
That's right.
Which wasn't.
No.
As good. Mm.
No.
How do you have a 20-year anniversary of everybody dying with people?
So anyway, so that's number two. And number one, which has affected me forever, is Dawn of the Dead.
Mm. Hmm.
The original.
The original Romero.
Sure. Yes. Of course.
The one. Night of the Living Dead was a great one for me. I loved it. I actually saw that after seeing Dawn of the Dead. But Dawn of the Dead was another one where I haven't seen – there's been very few horror movies that have done such a fantastic introduction, you know, intro into the whole piece. Mm-hmm. I mean, that whole piece of the film, like it seemed like it was shot on one camera the entire time, right?
Wow.
It wasn't, but you get this whole feeling of this chaotic newsroom and you get introduced to characters and there's chaos going on.
What year was that made?
I think 78. I want to say 78.
I don't think I've seen it. Loser.
And so
have you seen it, Cameron?
I have not seen the original. I've seen the remake, which I like.
The remake's good.
Yeah, the remake. I have seen the remake.
The remake is great. But going back to the old one where there's this sense of foreboding through the entire film, right? I mean, it's just from the beginning, from an original horror standpoint, no one has done such a, you know, an intro to chaos and a post-apocalyptic feel as that movie. As people are trying to figure things out, there's just chaos going on. And then them being holed up and, you know, everyone's dream is, ha-ha, everyone's dead, I'm in a mall, and this is going to be great. And then it just breaks down, right? It's just funny, like they created this little fun society and they're safe. And then that safety is just broke. And, you know, it brings into the debate of fast zombies versus slow zombies. And I really like the slow zombie because it brings your guard down as to, haha, he can't get me. But by masses, right, it's just by sheer mass and stupid human you know, faults, right, they totally took over. And so, you know, of course there's the gore and the over-the-top effects that were in that. But I just – the zombies breaking in and just wandering and they just – you know, it just – it was amazing.
Do you like the Walking Dead TV show? Have you seen it?
You know, I haven't seen the Walking Dead TV show. I don't have cable.
Okay.
And I haven't rented the discs yet, but I hear it's fantastic.
I thought it was good.
It's good for it's
so.
I think it's the first season.
Yeah, so you know, and it's like I like Zombieland.
Yeah,
and,
I think so.
I love Shaun of the Dead, but if I'm gonna pick something that was very, you know, original and effective for its time, it was Dawn of the Dead.
Nice. Yeah.
I need to watch that. Yeah, I need to watch it.
Definitely. So there you go.
Let's watch it together with the lights on. Hold me.
Buckbeak.
Brad, please save us. Save us, Brad, please.
I will do my best.
What are your favorite horror films?
Okay.
Ooh, this will be good.
Luckily, almost all of my honorable mentions have been mentioned. So
you got this covered.
I will just list one, which I know will never be on anyone's list. The original 1920 version of The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari.
Mm.
I've never even heard
you
of that.
You haven't, and I'm
that's
unless you've probably gone to film school or are a total film nerd, you probably haven't. But it
I
was
thought
a,
I was
a but... German a German film from 1920.
Ah, it's the Germans.
See Germans.
That was about a somnambulist, which is a sleepwalker.
Mm-hmm. Is that another Dano word, somnambulist?
No,
that's
actually
a word.
But he's used by Dr. Caligari to go commit murders for him.
Uh-huh.
Ooh. And it's done in the
black
typical
and white.
Pre-World War II German style of this kind of social tension, and it's very abstract, the shadows that go opposite directions of objects. It's just really, really something that's very.
Can you repeat the title again?
The Cabinet of Dr. Caligari from 1920.
It was beyond its time.
It really was.
Wow.
It was.
There's a movement at that time from German film German cinema. So anyways, that one was the only one that I know no one would have on their list. But that's just an honorable mention. So my number five is, which hasn't been mentioned yet, but I think it might be on someone's list. But it's the Swedish version of Let the Right One In.
Nice.
Yeah. Mm. It's good.
It's a good one.
New edition, but it was so powerful to me that it just had so many elements. The way they portrayed what happens when a vampire enters a room uninvited to...
which is a vampire thing that most movies don't cover. That,
well,
that's a
it's,
myth,
it's, always right? It's always talked about.
Yeah.
Lost Boys was the only other one.
Oh, I like the Lost Boys.
Yeah, Lost Boys kind of.
Well, it's in True Blood. It's in Lost Boys. It's in a. It's in a. It's in a lot of.
You've never seen like what happens to
exactly.
a vampire
and,
if you don't.
And what you think is just something very kind of effects-y, like you know, some kind of flash or weird effect that would show some kind of event, but. That scene was so just organic and just really it brought that myth to life.
Mm-hmm.
So that and just in general, that movie was so just the love story or the friendship story between the kid. Everything about it was just there were no flaws.
Yeah.
In the quality of that story.
What did you think of the American version?
It was fine, but it was nothing different or new or added from the original.
Yeah.
It was great as a standalone.
I thought it was good.
It was great, but
if you had never compared them,
it would have been really good if
if you didn't know
if it was the first attempt at that.
Have you seen the German version of Jaws? Yeah,
no,
it's actually a land shark. Das ist meine Land Shark. It comes out and takes people down. It's amazing. I'm just saying, you've probably never heard of it. It came out in the 20s.
Oh,
anyway, just kidding.
So number four on the list. It's kind of a strange choice because there's really a predecessor to this style of film that probably is on more people's lists, but it's Open Water.
Mm-hmm.
I like that. I saw that.
Jaws obviously is the quintessential shark movie of all time. But the reason I like Open Water is as an amateur hobbyist filmmaker, it really shows what can be done with limited budget and resources that are available to the consumer filmmaker. They did it on a $500,000 budget.
Wow.
They had a shot list that was not linear. It was very abstract, so they could shoot whatever they needed to when they went down to location in the Bahamas to shoot it.
Mm-hmm.
The couple that produced it, they used their vacation money and time to go down and shoot with their crew and their talent. And they had a real shark wrangler. Which actually, the uniqueness about this film is it had no CG or no effects in the
animatronic
sharks, nothing at all.
Blood
shooting. It was all shark wrangler manipulating the movement of the sharks to cater to the filming of the piece.
Wow.
They used digital video and they used Final Cut Pro edit systems, which for those of you who are hobbyist filmmakers know that's something that a lot of folks can afford and use for professional video editing. So it really, and then they sold it for millions of dollars. So I love the story itself was very, very suspenseful. And again, that unknown.
It was.
What's under the water?
Absolutely.
You never know. They never showed you. You saw the sharks and it was very tense and it really created emotion that you couldn't turn off. You had to succumb to.
Yeah, and they tuned to what people would do to save each other, right?
Yes,
you know
exactly.
what would happen in a stressful situation
between
a couple, right? Mm-hmm. Out there is, are they going to save each other? Are they going to leave each other to go?
Yep.
Right? I mean, it's that that Alfred Hitchcock man in the boat concept, right?
Yeah.
You know, who's gonna, it's kind of like Descent, right? Similar to Descent, these so horror story was the women that were fighting amongst themselves. That was scarier than the rest. Like the horrible thing was how they didn't bond, didn't say that. So it's similar to the Open Water, right?
Yeah,
it's a good one.
Definitely on my list.
I don't like to do scuba diving anymore either.
And I don't either. We talked about The Reef, which was
that's something that
somewhat similar.
Obviously, that was a little more Hollywood, but they didn't. That was good too because they didn't get into a lot of effects. They didn't get into
it's all real shark footage.
There's one scene. I don't know why they did that.
Yeah,
so
yeah, it's kind of like if your friend's 15 feet away getting munched by the shark, do you swim over to try and help him, or do you go, well, I probably can't do much, or what do you do at that point?
What
would you do, Andrew?
Well, it depends on the friend.
If it was me.
I'd swim the other way.
Like, I wouldn't be out there in the first place.
Yeah, really.
You call Buckbeak?
I would have stayed on the boat.
Buckbeak.
Buckbeak would swoop in, and I'd jump on him, and we'd ride away.
That's right.
You're a jerk.
Yeah, with your leg bit off. You'd live.
Thanks.
Yeah.
So I definitely think Jaws was more of a cultural phenomenon, but I personally liked Open Water. To me, just as a filmmaker or an aspiring hobbyist filmmaker, had way more connection.
Mm-hmm.
Number three on the list is the Blair Witch Project.
Nice. Ooh,
good.
That's a good one. I'm not sure why people didn't like it that didn't, because
I don't either.
To me, it was the absolute perfect example of what truly gets through in a horror film.
Yeah.
The unknown, the tension, the just there's nothing about that couldn't be believable.
Yeah,
exactly. The reality.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you could be in that situation, even if it's fabricated in your own mind.
Yeah.
It can still exist pretty easily in most similar scenarios.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
I love it's and you know, someone out there can correct me, but right now it's the first horror movie of the found footage genre.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, mm-hmm. Now today it's like, a good God, there's so many found footage horror movies coming out. And it's just like, really? You know, they found footage in the asylum.
Right.
Oh, found footage in the
basement. On the moon. Of the moon landing.
Paranormal Activity.
Yeah.
Yep.
Caught
up early.
Found footage.
I'm guilty of that.
Yeah. Yeah, no, we did it for The Haunt.
Yeah, the first year I came out of The Haunt.
We're like, hey, let's do found footage.
Yep. That was one of our
You know,
trailer.
It can be effective. But man, there wasn't blood. I mean, it was just, it was a perfect build through there, and
it really was.
I debated to having that on my list. Well, I remember going to the theater to watch it, and it was just dead silent. Right, everyone was just like,
"See, I'm wondering, because the first time I went to see it, it was at a theater in downtown Seattle,
mm-hmm.
One of the boutique theaters.
Yeah,
and the line was literally wrapped around the block a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
Wow,
and that was I went for the evening show, and that line was for the midnight show.
Ah.
So I'm like, okay, we're not going to see it. So I waited till the hype had died down, went to another theater at like 11 in the morning. No one was there. I picked the center seat. I'm like, this is my experience. I had a great time, but I would have loved to see what the reaction was of mm-hmm. people around mm-hmm. me, because I didn't get that. I don't like crowd theaters, but that would have been a case where I'd love to see how people reacted. But I just didn't talk for like hours afterwards.
I had taken my wife, and she hates horror films, and we weren't sure what to expect, and she was never again. I was sleeping on the floor for a week.
Yeah.
it was, but yeah, that's, you know, and then the marketing behind it is just, you know,
brilliant.
The marketing was brilliant. I mean, back in the days when it was forums, right?
Mm-hmm.
I even created a parody site called the Von Goat Project to talk about how this crazy goat lived out in the woods. And I mimicked a site and everything to do it. And I had such a blast doing that. But it's easy to put something that together. Hey, we found this, and it's a true urban story, right?
Yeah,
and
that's the other thing.
Back before the internet, right, you can do a Google or a Bing or a search. Before mm-hmm. search engines, you were just like, wow. And people would tell you, hey, check out this site.
Yeah.
You're like, no way.
And it's a great example of how the most important thing about making a film, a fictional film, or any film really, is that the story reigns supreme.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't have that, then if you do have that, the technology is totally irrelevant.
Yep. It
doesn't matter. And that's a great example of that. So number two on my list, which
Ooh.
Is a repeat, is the Texas Chainsaw Massacre original.
Good one. Mm.
Great.
And again, that's you can't really argue against that as being one of the best horror films of all time, or at least being worthy of on anyone's list.
Yeah.
I mean, everything about it. To me, the most significant element of that film is that there's almost literally no gore. I don't
Absolutely.
Even think
really?
Any
no.
gore at all.
No, there's...
And it's
where
strange.
Does it take place?
It's...
When or where?
What was where?
In Texas.
Where? It's Texas. No gore.
Hence the title.
Yeah.
Yes.
I see.
No,
I really want to see it. I'm just kidding. It's interesting. It's seeped into pop culture because
mm-hmm. yeah.
I know who directed it. I know the guy's name is Leatherface, and yet I've never seen it.
Yeah,
sure.
I guarantee you I haven't seen it. Unless I was hammered and forgot.
Well, it's probably one of the, I think it's one of the first films that incorporated the Ed Gein story.
That close, I think Psycho.
Yeah, actually, you're right.
Psycho Alfred Hitchcock's was the first that mm-hmm. had, you know, although it was very subtle, the mommy guy complex, but it was the first one that took the idea of masks and whatnot. So yeah, absolutely. The Ed Gein piece.
Yeah, I even went online to try and confirm that, even though I've watched it under that scrutiny before. But the only time that it's even close to being gory is when the girl is grabbed, brought mm-hmm. back in, and put on the hook.
Yep.
Obviously, the being put on the hook is a very gruesome thing, but you don't actually see it.
Yeah, you don't see
the
hook.
And then he proceeds
coming.
To basically mutilate the right. one of the male characters there. But at the same time, you see the chainsaw, you don't see the blood
squirting,
you don't see anything. All the kill scenes, it's all the reaction, the shaking of the feet or the head,
yep.
but never the flesh meets the weapon. It's just it's brilliant. You just you don't see any. It almost could be considered a PG-rated movie.
Wow.
In some twisted sense of you know,
yeah,
so,
I know
it just so that to me is amazing, and that's truly the that tells you that someone knows how to tell a story and mm-hmm. isn't just going to use gimmicks to propel that. So anyways, definitely a classic.
Nice.
Number one, again, is a very, very old classic. The original Nosferatu.
Nice.
Ooh.
From 1922.
Max Schreck.
It's a silent film.
Yes.
And it's directed by F.W. Marno, who was a famous film director at that time. Stars Max Schreck. As the main...
they stole that name for Batman Returns.
Really?
That's Christopher Walken's name.
And, that's
yeah, and that's why he took it.
The reason that's...
The
reason I mention that is because there's a lot of kind of folklore around him mm-hmm. as that character because from he didn't wear makeup and that was actually him in real life.
And they made a movie about that.
The Shadow of the Vampire.
Yes,
exactly.
I saw that.
So there's some truth to that.
Which was creepy.
It was creepy.
So there's a lot of myth around whether he might have been a real kind of weird... gothic type person and wasn't necessarily acting. And then the film is just, it's the very first known version of Bram Stoker's Dracula on film.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't authorized. So there was actually I think there were some later legal issues with that. But anyways, it's something I kind of studied in film class. So it's kind of a,
were his fangs his front teeth? Weren't they? His
yeah,
front
exactly.
Teeth? They weren't
yeah.
like the
yeah.
Homo he was. Choppers. He was. He. That's the other thing is he wasn't a handsome vampire, which is way more the tradition of Hollywood in the later years. Yeah. You know, it was
especially now.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, there was the 79 version with
It was Klaus Kinski and Werner Herzog. Werner Herzog was the director, and Klaus Kinski is the actor. He played Nosferatu.
Oh, okay.
Another German film. But,
it's a German's return.
The Germans.
It's like Indiana Jones. It's always the Nazis, right?
Same. Actually, that was the same kind of style. Very, just kind of.
No, but what? I guess I was thinking of there was a 70s Dracula movie with Frank Langella when he was obviously 30 plus years ago. And that was kind of like the. That was more of the I'm Dracula and I'm suave.
Oh, sure.
Up to that point, I don't recall. Because Christopher Lee was Dracula in a bunch of films. But I don't think he was considered like dreamy, more creepy.
And wasn't Vincent Price Dracula many times? I'm sure
he was a lot of different scary people at many times, creepy people.
So, anyways, that's I don't necessarily watch it all the time because it is a silent film.
Yeah,
but it's hard not to watch it and be just awe-inspired and some respect the quality of filmmaking mm-hmm. and just the magnitude of that project.
Is it scary at this point or creepy? Is it still creepy?
It's creepy.
It is
not,
creepy.
Not modern day creepy.
Okay.
But it is definitely creepy. But I think more so it just kind of aligns with the Bram Stoker's Dracula story and it's just a classic. It really is a classic.
Nice. I had a chance to see that. There was a huge cathedral in Spokane when I was going to school over there and they were doing silent movie nights. Mm-hmm. And it was during October, and that was one of the first things they showed. And I had never seen it. It had a black and white screen and a projector showing it, and they had an actual real organist in the back playing. It was a Gothic cathedral, you know, on a big screen. It just it set me in, and I thought, wow, this is amazing.
Because
that's how they used to, play silent films with a live orchestra or musical element in the theater.
Good choice.
Thanks.
Good job. Good picks all around. All right, my turn.
No, I gotta go.
Scott Pilgrim.
Scott Pilgrim.
The Matrix. All right, so my number five, and Yeah, I'm younger than you guys, so...
Oh, you're not.
Maybe my picks will be a little different, but I think you guys will appreciate these. My number five, Scream.
Okay.
So I feel like Scream reinvented kind of the horror genre in its own little way, slasher flick, right? Without it, we wouldn't have had... Let's see. I Know What You Did Last Summer. Urban Legend, Valentine.
Those are all good.
Halloween H2O. Yeah, right. I mean, they're not very good. And shoot, it was parodied in Scary Movie.
Final Destination. Yeah.
I mean,
five.
Yeah. I mean, it just
don't ride a roller coaster.
It just kicked off this brand new subgenre of horror. And so,
yeah, and even played with the idea of horror. Like, oh, you know, you're not supposed to get killed, right? Yeah. They had all these elements that they brought back.
I definitely, though it seemed kind of like a rehash or some kind of a mashup of everything that's already been done. It did reinvent in its own way, and it was its own standalone, kind of film. So
yeah.
I liked it. I definitely liked it.
And it's a horror movie that kind of knew it was a horror movie. Like
exactly.
You had that character that was like, you know, these are the ways you survive a horror film, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I thought that was really cool. And then also I'm a big fan of twist endings.
Totally.
And so I always love the surprise of the killer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And yeah, I mean that
the Scooby-Doo
does
off
it
the mask.
Yeah,
nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. It was the bartender.
I think the first movie came out when I was in junior high. And that first opening scene with Drew Barrymore on the phone just still haunts me.
Yeah.
I mean, I can still watch that film and be freaked out.
That was creepy. Mm-hmm.
Interesting.
Yeah, the idea of someone calling you, you're babysitting or whatever.
Yeah, and just helpless out in the middle of nowhere. And
what, you see me?
Yeah.
Now I'm in the bathroom. Can you see me? I can still see you.
I'm in the house. I'm in the house.
All right, so number four is Let the Right One In. The original version that Brad mentioned already.
That's fiendish version.
What I have to say about it is that the cinematography is fantastic.
Sure.
It's very Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It's based on it was based on a book originally. Mm-hmm. And what's very cool about it is the author of the book also wrote the screenplay.
Mm-hmm.
So you have a very authentic script.
Right.
The child acting is fantastic. I mean, those kids are amazing. And I wanted to say when you were talking about this, but I had to hold back.
I know what you're going to say because I will...
The final scene of that film haunts me to this day.
Yeah.
I think it is one of the most creative horror scenes
Absolutely.
I've ever seen in my entire life. And a movie with a very low budget to pull off effects like that. The American remake, they do the same scene. It's just not as effective. You can tell they use CGI effects and stuff like that. It's just not as good.
Yeah.
The original, oh man, so awesome.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil it here just because I want people to see this film.
Yeah.
I think it still hasn't gotten that much visibility. But yeah, please go see it. I think it's on Netflix. I want to say it's on Netflix. Watch instantly.
I know it was there, but I don't
know. Aren't they called Quick Flicks now or some other?
Quickster?
Yeah, Quickster.
That's getting the discs.
Oh.
Quickster is the chocolate milk delivery service.
I like that. Yeah.
Nestle Quick.
Yeah.
It's the rabbit.
$8.99 a
month. It's the rabbit.
Limit 4 glasses.
Well, you can subscribe for 5. That's right.
Anyway, yeah, highly suggested movie.
Thanks for mentioning the ending because I forgot about that. I can't believe I did.
We didn't spoil anything. Trust me, you'll still be shocked.
And I want to say, it's one of my favorites, and I love that, you know, most vampire movies, it's aggressive, right? The vampire grabs someone and they become a minion or whatever. And this one, it's subtle, like it's just manipulation.
Yeah,
right. Here's this troubled kid, right, and she's just kind of
almost like
beating
a
her
survival.
Way into it.
Like she's trying to survive the fact that she's a vampire by not being such a vampire.
Yeah.
And integrating with society.
Mm-hmm.
And then you know, the twist, you kind of know what this boy's in for, right? And it's not even told. It doesn't have to go in your face like, and then he'll be.
That's true.
There's this great, I don't want to call it a twist, but there's a great realization that the guy in the first part and the kid, there's this collision course that's going to happen, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you pick that up. You're like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah. The subtleness of that whole relationship too between the kid and the adult.
Mm-hmm.
In the original, it's like kind of unknown. In the American version, they kind of make it more clear.
Yeah. I got to tell you how it works here.
Yeah. All right. Number three for me is The Shining.
Nice.
Oh,
that was, yeah, that was a hard one.
That was hard one
on the list.
Made it on the list. So
yeah, that was
it's
hard.
On my list, definitely. Kubrick is just masterful.
Just the drive up to the hotel and the opening scene. Just...
To me, this movie is like the definition of a horror film.
Exactly.
And that's great that you brought it up being a generational thing, because then there's another 70s film, right?
Sure.
And I had it on my list, but you know, I dropped it off because of Jaws, because that just affected me more physically.
Yeah.
I don't have a problem going with hotels anymore, but but man, that's just the isolation concept.
I have a deep appreciation for it too, is because I saw it later in life. Like, I didn't see it until I was probably like 19 or 20 years old. So I already had an understanding of film. And when I saw this, I was just amazed.
And it's got your favorite twist end, right?
Oh, amazing twist end. It's awesome. Tons of horrific images. I mean, iconic. You see these images replay on TV sometimes. Yeah. And man, it's been parodied a lot. I mean, on The Simpsons, it's everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere.
South Park.
Yeah, it's a movie that takes madness. It has done it unlike any other film. All right, number two for me. I haven't heard it mentioned at all, so I'm really excited to talk about this one. Cube.
Oh, good one.
Yes.
Yeah, I love that film.
I was obsessed
another low budget.
With this film.
I don't think I've seen
when it
that.
First came out.
I know.
So low budget.
Yeah, absolutely.
I believe it was from a Canadian filmmaker.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, it's about a group of people who wake up in a colorful cube. They don't remember how they got there, and they basically have to find a way out of this giant cube maze.
Yeah, it's like...
And, there's all these puzzles. There's numbers, like, on all the doors in the cube, and some of the rooms have booby traps in them that will kill them.
Mm-hmm. What's in there?
Booby.
Ooh.
Traps.
Gonna have to cut that out. So, kind of.
Yeah, but this is pre-Saw.
Sure. Yeah, so this is Descent plus Saw.
This is the one with the lasers where they get cubed and cut.
I don't know if there were lasers in this one, but there are definitely metal wires.
Yeah, they get cut up and they like fall apart in little chunks of.
That happens right at the beginning, so you're not spoiling anything
there. I don't know. Yeah, I think I saw that part.
And they're like, oh, that's trouble.
It's really interesting.
It's
minced. You've been minced.
Couple cool things. It's inspired by a Twilight Zone episode from 1961.
Really?
In which five people wake up in a cylinder and they as well don't know how they got there.
Mm.
And they basically want to escape. And the only way to escape is through the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
And so they have to kind of work together to try and get out.
It's the Work Together movie.
There's a really neat twist at the end of that episode.
I was on the floor.
Yeah, the whole time. Another cool thing is all the characters are named after prisons around the world.
I did not know that.
Because they're stuck in this cube.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So kind of neat little things about that movie. I highly recommend it. I think it was just right at the perfect moment for me at the age where, you know, I liked movies that were scary and made me think a little bit.
Yeah, it's a thinker. At the end, you're like,
Yeah, yeah. It spawned two sequels. Actually, I should say a sequel and a prequel.
Oh, okay.
Cube 2, Hypercube.
Hypercube.
Which got a bigger budget and CGI and just kind of, it took it to a different direction. And a lot of the fans were disappointed. It's okay. It's definitely, not that great.
Waste of money.
And then there was Cube 0, which is the prequel. And it kind of covers like what happened before the first movie.
Oh.
The creation of the cube and all that stuff. So
that's neat.
It's interesting to find out information wise, but they're not very well done.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Okay, so
nice.
I got to mention my honorable mention only because I think it's debatable for it to be considered a horror film. So I'm not going to include it, but it's my favorite film of all time, Old Boy.
Oh, for God.
Some people will consider it a horror film, others will not. So I just have to say, if it was considered a horror film, that would be my favorite. But I'm just going to leave that as an honorable mention and say my number one is Shaun of the Dead.
Oh, there you go. Good one.
I really thought about putting that on there.
I thought about it too, but I knew someone else would talk about it.
I mean, out of all these movies, which one could I watch over and over again?
Yep.
It's Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
It's scary.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's romantic. It's the movie that invented the rom-com, as Jason elegantly put it earlier in the podcast.
That's a good one. Yeah, that reinvigorated, I think, or at least, I don't want to say reinvigorated, that that helped put zombies on the populace radar.
Yeah.
It moved the idea. I mean, you can say 28 Days Later reinvented the zombie concept of rager zombies. Mm. But the idea of Shaun of the Dead being funny and you got this slothy game-playing character, you know, suddenly has to be the hero. And then you can cater to all of the, you know, you throw in a whole bunch of background pieces for horror fanatics, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, the probe landing. So you got homage to Romero and you got, you know, homage to the Evil Dead. And it became a cult classic.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's the reason Zombieland was created, which I thought, like, when I saw previews, I was like, oh, that's going to be terrible. They're just basically copying Shaun of the Dead.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
Yeah, I
loved
good.
It.
Yeah.
It was hilarious. And it, I mean, it was...
The opening soundtrack was perfect.
Yes. You know,
cheese ball. I'm trying to... Is it blue? Whatever. But yeah, that soundtrack.
So good. And the cameo was hilarious. So we won't spoil that here, but...
No. And then it answers the ultimate question that a lot of zombie horror fans have had. Like, if you just acted like a zombie, could you get away
with
it?
Could you get away? Yeah. Would they know?
Now you know, right?
Totally. All right, well, that is it. That wraps up our discussion of horror films today. I think some really great choices were heard here. Also, some that I need to check out.
Yeah.
Let's move on to the reviews portion of our show.
Mm. Reviews!
All right, so the first movie that I would like to review today is Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene. Say that three times fast. Did you just snore, Andrew?
Yes.
Oh, I was just inhaling. I have a
yeah. You were inhaling
difficulty.
Your beer.
Yeah.
Deviated.
How many
septum?
Is that now? Five.
This would be number 17.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good.
It's the only way I can
Martha,
stand.
Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene is a small independent film that actually,
that no one will ever see.
That actually premiered at Sundance earlier this year. It stars Elizabeth Olsen, who is the younger sister of the Olsen twins, Mary Kate and Ashley. I actually got to meet her at the screening that I went to. It was a special advanced screening. The movie.
How do you get those special advanced screening invites?
You just got to be special.
Well, I know that, but.
You got to have a movie podcast.
Oh.
That's the first step.
Well.
A popular one.
Next month, Katsu and Friends. Hello.
Oh,
when
boy.
Does that air? When does that air?
It's going to be a daily podcast. 6 hours.
The Euros. Gyoza.
Gyoza.
Like I said, I got to meet Elizabeth Olsen. She's a very sweet girl because she hasn't really done any feature-length films before. So she was very humble and appreciative of the fans. And the movie itself is okay. Some people were calling it this year's Black Swan. I don't think it's that good. The cinematography and the editing are fantastic. The sound design is actually really good.
Mm.
It's turned up at all the right moments. And it creates this very unsettling paranoia vibe to the movie. But I don't think there's a very deep message to the film.
What is the story?
I mean,
I have no idea.
So the movie is about this young lady played by Elizabeth Olsen.
Good enough. I'm in. Let's see it.
Who gets involved with a cult in kind of the country, not countryside, the hills of New York State.
Ooh.
And it's a very weird cult. They believe in some really weird stuff. Eventually she flees. And she goes to live with her older sister and her sister's husband. And it's about her dealing with the psychology of what happened and the paranoia of them, like, maybe finding her. You know, it's just really odd, creepy. Some could consider it a horror film, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure. But it's a film worth watching because Elizabeth Olsen is awesome. She's great in the film, and I see a very bright future for her, at least more so than her sisters.
She'll come on the show. I hope she comes on the show.
That would be awesome, but I think she's already too popular.
What?
She's got few movies coming out next year with some big stars. I think she's going to be starring alongside, like, Robert De Niro and Meryl Streep already. She's already
forget it.
Whatever.
Beyond Cam Fu.
Bob De Niro.
I know. So Bobby. The movie comes out in a couple weeks here, I think. So worth seeing if you like independent films and if you want to see her. She might get nominated for an Academy Award. Possible.
No way.
Not sure if it's actually going to happen. We'll see. It's very possible. She's very good. The next movie I want to talk about is 50-50. I think there's a lot of previews playing on TV now, but it's being touted as the cancer comedy, right? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like Funny People. A lot of people are comparing it to that, but I think it's very different from that film. It stars Joseph Gordon-Levitt, who finds out that he has cancer.
And, what kind?
there's something on his back.
Oh.
Back cancer.
There's a really...
Well, cancer's not funny. It's not, but okay.
Well, no, I think it's a cancer comedy is very appropriate. I think it's good to be able to laugh at some of the things that happen when you have cancer. I mean, not that the disease is a funny thing, but mm-hmm. it kind of just brings it brings the light side of...
Yeah, yeah. And it's based on, from what I read or heard, Seth Rogen had a friend that actually had cancer.
Yeah, so. He's actually the writer of the film, is the guy who Joseph Gordon-Levitt plays. And Seth Rogen really was one of his best mates going through this disease. So it's a film that's very funny and also very sad. I mean, it is emotional. Sure. It's cliche to say, but you will laugh and you will cry. I got teary-eyed
It's a good title.
Film. Yeah. Great acting. Seth Rogen, a lot of people kind of give him some flack, but I think he's very good in this film. Joseph Gordon-Levitt, he had 1 week to prepare for this role, and he knocks it out of the park. He's amazing. Nice. Not my favorite role of his, but he's awesome. Angelica Houston's in the movie, and she plays his mother, and she has the best role. I mean, she's fantastic in this film. The one negative thing I would say about this movie is it takes place in Seattle. That's not the negative thing. It's that it's not really filmed here, right? It's one of those Hollywood films that they filmed up in Vancouver and they make it look like Seattle. Yeah. And that's just a pain. I mean, Seattle's such a beautiful city. And yeah, it rains, but I mean, we just had an amazing summer. I think it could have been shot here.
Are you talking about yesterday? Or the day before.
Because there's been 3 days this summer.
Yeah, three nice days.
Now, why don't they just say it's in Vancouver?
Yeah.
You know, yeah, seriously.
That's a beautiful city, too.
We can't relate to the Canadians.
Like, oh, it's a Canadian movie. I guess we can't see it.
Well, yeah, I mean, the majority of the time it would take place in igloos. So that wouldn't be very entertaining.
It's not.
They'd be eating poutine every...
That's right.
Every scene.
Nutella.
But I recommend seeing this movie.
I'm lost.
Very good movie. The next film I'm going to talk about is Moneyball.
Ah.
Comes out Friday, but by the time you're hearing this podcast, it's already out. Hmm. Moneyball stars Brad Pitt in a film about a baseball manager, the Oakland Athletics baseball manager. It's a great film, great script. Written by Aaron Sorkin, who wrote last year's The Social Network, and, you know, tons of other great stuff as well. The movie has a great score as well. It's not very present in the film. It's very subtle and very quiet, but very effective.
Did you see this already?
I saw it.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay.
I saw it last night.
I didn't know if you're on the payroll for Moneyball. You're just, hey, PR.
It's a good
best movie of the year. Have you seen it? Nope.
It's getting a lot of a little bit of Oscar buzz, and I guess it kind of makes sense. Brad Pitt's performance is pretty good, but I don't know if it's. I mean, it's not my favorite film of the year, but it's good. It's worth seeing if you love baseball, especially the behind the scenes stuff of managing a team and the players and coaching and all that.
What if you don't like baseball at all? Would you still like the movie?
Then you'd like Brad Pitt.
You might like certain aspects of it, but maybe wait to rent it, which you're going to do anyway.
Yeah. Okay. fair enough.
One negative thing I will say is that, actually two negative things. One, it's kind of slower at the end of the film. Mm. And also, the film, it's based on a book that the author, he also wrote the book for The Blind Side. So he's a sports writer, right? This book is this guy Billy Bean is not the only guy to have brought. That's his name.
I know. I lived in the Bay Area. I remember reading about him. But
Billy Bean.
Cool. Billy Bean. Well, pretty funny.
He's not the only person to have brought in, like, statistic baseball, right? Basing your team.
Are you talking about sabermetrics?
Yeah.
Sure.
He's not the only guy to have done this, but the book and the movie, of course, puts him in this, like, big spotlight.
Right.
You know, he's the guy.
Kind of like The Blind Side. I read a lot of that was heavily...
Dramatized.
Yeah.
Dramatized.
Yeah.
My word, dramatized.
Dramatized.
And the best part of this film was before the movie started, I got to see an 8-minute preview of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, which comes out later this year in December, directed by David Fincher. And it looks pretty darn good.
Have you seen the original series?
Here's the thing. I have not.
I have.
And I'm going to wait to see the original. I'm going to wait. And, you know, a lot of people, I think, are making a mistake with this film in... It's kind of like with Let the Right One In, right? Everyone's going, oh, no, they shouldn't have remade that. You know, the American version is going to be terrible. But this film... I don't know. I think this one has the possibility of being either just as good or possibly better. You got David Fincher, who has dealt with this, with the topic of solving a crime before in Zodiac, which is a brilliant, brilliant, underrated movie.
Sure. I agree.
And so I got a lot of that vibe when I saw the preview. And also with The Social Network, you see a lot of that in the dialogue of the film. I think it's something to look forward to, but that's based off of an 8-minute preview. So it was a
Long preview.
It's a really long. I mean, it was a special preview. This is the first time I went to an advanced screening where you were not allowed to bring your cell phone in. I mean, they say that every time.
Did you?
No, they say that every time, but this time they were serious about it. Like they scanned you and everything. It was totally serious. Other times I can just stick it in my back pocket and they won't.
Mm-hmm. There's other places to hide it. How did you get your picture with Mary-Kate and Ashley or whoever that?
Elizabeth Olsen?
Yeah.
Well, that's exactly it.
How'd that work?
That was one of the movies where they were like, no cell phones.
Oh, it's a different movie.
Yes.
This is all coming together.
You are so drunk. Anyway, so that's Moneyball. Go see the film and look forward to The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo. Last movie I'm going to talk about, Drive. Drive is one of my favorite films of the year. It rivals the number one spot.
Can I just say that I was surprised. I've seen that and have been intrigued, but I just noticed that it is listed on one of Rotten Tomatoes' top highest ratings of all time already.
Oh,
really?
I didn't see that.
I think it was like it was upwards of 100 ratings, but it was so I was kind of surprised that it's a 2011 film and it's already made its way in the upper echelon of Rotten Tomato ratings.
It has very good reviews. It's a fantastic film. Fantastic. I mean, I'm seriously debating making it my number one film of the year so far. But for those of you who don't know, Ryan Gosling stars, and he plays a Hollywood car stunt driver who moonlights as a quiet getaway driver. He's fantastic. I mean, this has been the year of the Gosling. He's had so many fantastic
Man
films.
Crush.
Man crush, sure. I'll take that. He's had so many fantastic
Romance.
Roles in this movie. He got attached to this film before there was a director, and he got to choose... the director of the film, which I don't know if that's the first time that's happened, but definitely unique. And he chose Nicholas Winding Refn. I might be butchering that name, but he has done Valhalla Rising and Bronson, which I've heard are good films. I haven't seen them, though.
And Valhalla Rising.
Now I want to because this film was so fantastic. Refn did win... Best Director at Cannes earlier this year for this film. So All the acting in the film is great. Gosling is amazing. Carey Mulligan's in it, and she's pretty cute. Bryan Cranston from Breaking Bad is in it. He's awesome. Albert Brooks plays the total opposite character than he voiced in Finding Nemo. I mean, he's a bad guy in this movie. And Ron Perlman is in it looking ugly as usual.
Beauty and Beast.
Oh, and Christina Hendricks is in the movie from Mad Men.
Oh, yeah.
The redhead.
Yeah.
Fire.
And it's cast. A role that I've never seen her do before. It's kind of more like white trashy. She's always like this prissy, like well-dressed, proper
voluptuous
girl in all the movies. Yeah, sure. This one, she's kind of like really trashy and I think foul-mouthed too.
All right.
But the movie, what's unique about it is that it combines art house film, like independent film, with action. Mm-hmm. It's awesome. The music is like this retro 80s synth Euro pop soundtrack. It's so cool. One of the songs on there is done by the Chromatics, who I've liked for a few years now. And even the title design is reminiscent of 80s films like Risky Business and To Live and Die in L.A., which is probably a huge inspiration for this film. It takes like place in L.A. But there's like pink cursive.
Yeah.
You know, it's really awesome.
Pink.
80s.
Like I said, one of my favorite films of the year. I can't recommend it enough. Maybe not for everyone because of the art house elements. There's a lot of slow motion, but it's very effective. Very effective. Fantastic film. Go see it.
Drive.
I think he likes it.
I do.
Do you like it?
Seems that way.
Okay.
All right, so I'm done. Let's move to Brad.
Okay. So I will start with, speaking of Breaking Bad, I just finished the third season of Breaking Bad, which has been in the upper echelon of my favorite television shows over the last few years. It definitely, well, the series, for those of you not familiar, which is a shame if you aren't, is about a high school science teacher who is diagnosed with terminal cancer. And this all happens in the first season. And as a result of that, he uses his skills as a scientist to join forces with an old student of his, a high school dropout, to basically become meth cookers.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, it evolves like most seasons that kind of have this this element, like Weeds, this element of suburban family or just normal family thrown into a criminal world. And so it evolves in the third season. Eventually, they become very coveted in their own right. So they join forces with a mass distributor and become a very, you know, $1 million cook for this very famous drug dealer. And anyways, the season starts off very slow, but it definitely ended as one of the strongest. It was definitely one of the strongest season finales I've seen in a long time, and definitely the strongest for this show.
So here's the thing with Breaking Bad for me, and I know you already know this, but I got to say it again. Breaking Bad, fantastic first season. Yeah. Loved it. Couldn't stop watching it. I was addicted.
No question.
So I had to watch the second season.
Yep.
I got through like three episodes, and I'm just like, nothing has happened. Individually, each episode is well done, but just not enough for me to like the end of the, like I'll get to the end of the episode and nothing makes me want to go, oh, I want to watch the next one.
Sure.
And so I've just been struggling through the first half of season two. And I urge any fan of the show, like I know it gets better, but I urge you to go back, rewatch season two, and you might see what I'm talking about. It's just dreadfully slow. And now it should also be said that the show, the first three seasons are on Netflix Watch Instant now.
Mm-hmm.
So very much easier to watch.
Yeah.
And it looks great, by the way. It is a good thing for me because it's helping me watch the show again.
Yeah.
It's much easier for me to watch. So I have continued, and I believe I'm 7 episodes into the second season.
Okay.
And it still really hasn't gotten me. But I know it gets better. and I've constantly heard it's one of the best shows on TV right now. So
it is.
I will get into it. I just struggling through the
first. They definitely don't exploit the cliffhanger tactic, which is very common these days with modern television. But the acting alone, and just the idea of that type of a lifestyle that, you know, that was a survival mechanism first, a means to support his family through his own dire circumstances, and now it's become who he is. You know, he's a high level meth cook, but really a science teacher at heart. Great ending. I thought it was probably one of the strongest. It was definitely as strong as season one, and a good strong cliffhanger at the end to really draw me into season four, because I was about ready to give it up, to be honest. But now I really want to see what's going to happen in season four. And I should say that I watch DVDs on Netflix and through instant streaming primarily. I don't have cable television, so I'm generally, typically about a season behind most things. So I will admit that. I'm sure most people have already watched season four or are watching it now.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Season four
is airing now. Or is
currently just airing, yeah. Correct. And like I said, first three seasons on Netflix.
So definitely still good. Still a quality show, and I definitely am looking forward to the next season. I just finished True Blood season three. And I'm done with that show. It's too soap opery, overacting, dramatic. And I'm like, how many mystical creatures are there possibly going to be?
Oh, and we didn't know about that one.
She's a fairy and he's a vampire. He's a werewolf and he's a shapeshifter and he's a, you know, he's an air traffic controller. And
I've heard it's gotten silly.
It is silly. That's a good way to describe it. And I'm pretty much done. I don't even know if I finished the season. But anyways, I'm pretty much done with that show. I just saw Tangled, Disney film.
Oh.
Very good, but, you know, typical Disney film. Great story, enchanting. And some, you know, modern day films have a little more comedy in them in the Disney genre. And
wasn't that Zachary Levi and Mandy Moore?
That's it. Yep.
Yep.
And did he do his own singing?
He did.
Oh, impressive.
Chuck. Pretty darn good.
What's up, Chuck? Some good singing.
nothing really new or innovative or something. Yeah, it's another Disney film that's quality, and I'm sure the kids all love it, and I liked it, and it was great. But
I really liked it a lot.
I like Blonde, so it was good.
It's kind of a guilty pleasure for me. It's a movie I enjoy watching with my daughter a lot.
That's primarily the reason. I mean, I enjoyed it, but I did even more like watching it with my daughter.
Yeah.
Because she definitely, although I will say that, you know, she's three and she, the whole time she sat there kind of just mesmerized as if she, I think she's not old enough to really get story yet. So that part of it didn't translate to her. So it was just the occasional horsey or,
yeah.
Funny.
Or the song.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. She's a musical horsey person. So that rang true there, but, nice. So anyways,
naughty lady.
Definitely a good watch. Disney never disappoints. I also saw Ponyo for the first time recently.
What?
Ponyo?
Ponyo? Is that how you pronounce it?
Ponyo? I don't know how it's officially, but that's what it is.
it's always been on my list since it came out.
Yakisoba and Ponyo, please.
But again, that was kind of a response to finding something that, you know, I'm introducing my daughter into film and television, much to the bemoan of my wife, but so that was something I thought was a good attempt at introducing her into the visual realm of television. And
it's perfect. I think that's the first movie that I showed my daughter from like beginning to end, and she loved it.
It was great. It was really it's just very enchanting and adorable, and I mean just the visuals and the characters of it, but let alone the story, which I'm sure had way more symbolism than I was willing to really invest in at the time. But
it's inspired by The Little Mermaid.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Kind of loosely based. Yes.
Yeah. So definitely great animation film. And then I just finished recently, in fact last night, the third season of Damages, which is a show about Patty Hughes, a very high level
lawyer who targets, takes on class action lawsuits against major corporations. That's kind of her thing, played by Glenn Close. It's a good show. It's very exciting and very well edited and written. But the primary reason that it really stands out to me is it's got to be the best example of the casting director for that show is worth their weight in gold. I've never seen a better job at casting not only just good people for roles, but finding people that are not washed up but are just have found their way out of the business or out of the limelight and are being brought back in and have become stars. Ted Danson, Glenn Close, who are some others? The list is pretty long, but there's all every Martin Short was just in the recent one, and he's this sinister, evil lawyer. And that's not a character that you would associate with him.
Totally.
But he plays it perfectly. And that, to me, is a pretty remarkable accomplishment for the casting team.
Yeah. And I've started to hear good things about Danson.
I mean, they won the casting award for the Emmy. So they definitely have gotten credit for that.
But, yeah, like a lot of people.
It's
are,
pretty amazing.
A lot more people are talking about that show than previous years.
Yeah. So, that would be my recently seen reviews.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Yeah.
Dano, what do you have for us?
All right. I'll make it quick. I haven't seen a lot. Recently in the last month due to the prior appointments and stuff with A Haunt. But two movies that stand out is The Way Back with Ed Harris and Colin Farrell. I'm an Ed Harris fan, not a Colin Farrell fan, but his character in this movie was well done. Actually played the crazy Russian with lots of tats and ink and crazy hair very well. The story centers around a group of folks that are sent to Gulag in Siberia, and they decide to escape. And they decide, it's based off a true story, they decide to escape with the help, and they gather food, and they go across Siberia, down across the border, and make it into the Gobi Desert, cross the desert, meet some people along the way, and make it into India. And, of course, people die along the way, and there's some, you know, there's some great moments where they're fighting amongst each other, and they've got to survive. And it's just this amazing, like, you know, it's based off a true story, and you're like, really, this really happened? And these people had nothing, and they just traveled through the Siberian forest?
I heard some of the facts of the film or the book
right.
have been exaggerated.
And like more than likely.
Found evidence of exaggerating.
Maybe they didn't eat the bugs. They ate grass instead or something.
Yeah.
But either way, I mean, you just the whole idea of traversing, you know, even, you know, something as a guy, you're like, well, would I survive that? You know, the even amazing with what they had. I mean, they dealt with starvation and freezing in the snow and wolves. And, you know, you never think that wolves would be a problem. And, yeah, they would be a big problem. So that was a pretty amazing movie. Another one that was okay, but I thought it was clever. It was a low-budget film. Reminded me of Bubba Hotep. In the light of things, a funny horror film starring Bruce Campbell. So it was a comedy. What do you call a com horror?
Andrew knows a lot about com whores.
She's funny and costs a lot of money.
Yeah. So, not to be mentioned with the communication whore.
So
com whore. Well,
yes. Different breed.
But it's called The Last Lovecraft. Relic of Cthulhu.
Did you just switch languages?
Yeah.
Get it.
Welcome to my empire.
Yeah. Cthulhu. Cthulhu.
So it's based off of anyone that's an H.P. Lovecraft fan, and there are a lot of them out there. It's basically based off of this guy, modern day, that happens to be the heir of H.P. Lovecraft, which is kind of crazy in its own right because I guess he didn't have children. But he's the heir of H.P. Lovecraft, and there's this crazy cult that is the Cthulhu worshippers, and there's this other cult that is trying to protect the world, and they come and they find him, and he has to believe that he has to save the world, right? So it's one of that cheesy save the world moment. But it's actually pretty funny. It has a Shaun of the Dead lightheartedness to it with some funny gore and scenes where, you know, they try to escape and they're like, oh my, you know, it's that Buffy thing, right? Where
I can't believe that I'm a part of this. Yes, you are.
Did you like Buffy? Did you watch it?
I watched this. I never saw the series, but I did see the original
movie which I did too, and I didn't think it was good. But I know people are mad about the series.
Yeah,
the
series is good.
Is it good?
Well, Joss Whedon is
The series is was a lot better. In any respect than the film,
but the movie sucked.
It shouldn't be associated.
Yeah.
But anyway, I thought this was it was instant Netflix, great hour and a half of time spent just laughing, and even my wife got into it, and she just says this is funny. So. Nice cheese ball twist and the whole thing in it. So would recommend, even if you're not a horror or Lovecraft fan, you could just go into it. It's the bad guys in there, the typical Scooby-Doo or even a comic bad guy where like, I am the Empire. And they're like, well, master, we did this for you. I'll destroy you. You know, it's like you killing even his own guys, right? So it played off a lot of your contemporary comic themes. So good flick.
Cool. Nice. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, thank you. Andrew, go ahead.
Okay. A couple movies I've seen lately. Hannah was one that I just saw recently.
Cool. Yeah. Let's revisit Hannah. What did you think?
I didn't really like it.
I didn't think you would.
Yeah. Why is that?
Wow. I'm excited.
Because you're mainstream.
I think that's true. That's probably true. Mm-hmm. I thought the sound was kind of cool. The soundtrack was cool. It was interesting. I thought it started great. And then I just kind of...
But it's not your fault because the movie was sold as a mainstream movie, though.
Yeah.
People were expecting this big action
epic
flick. And it's not. It's very subtle. It has a lot of symbolism, a lot of beautiful imagery.
Yeah.
And this whole backstory on fairy tales.
It's based on the Three Little Pigs, right?
Anyway, I loved the film, but I understand why you don't like it.
Yeah, it was okay. I did see X-Men finally. I know we've talked about this on multiple episodes. I liked it a lot. I thought it was good. January Jones is a little stale, but she looks fantastic. Mm-hmm. The music thing, I thought about you. You're right. It does have the
kind of so thing. Cheesy.
But it didn't really bother me. Maybe because either I knew that I was expecting it or whatever, but I liked the 60s vibe. I think the 60s are interesting.
I like the
designs, planes, it's kind of a cool take on the whole deal. So as good as it could have been, in my opinion. I don't know.
I haven't seen it.
I thought it was okay. I mean, it's not bad. It wasn't like
you just didn't like the hula hoop guy.
There's a hula hoop guy?
That guy.
There's a hula hoop. That's not his name, but it's kind of like the motion. He like gyrates and
that's his, like what? Yeah, that's how he releases.
Yeah, he's like, I'm gonna release. Release a hoop.
Whoa.
Yeah, that's a trip. No, I thought that was pretty good. A couple terrible movies, just briefly. Priest. Looked kind of cool in the previews. Dreadful movie.
That looked awful.
Yeah. I heard it was bad.
it was bad.
I'm waiting for that to rent that one.
Arthur, not funny.
The remake or the...
Yeah, the remake. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think, Russell Brand is a funny guy.
He has his moments. He kind of did this really weird, like, Dobson. He kind of talked like this the whole time. And I'm like, quit doing that for one thing. And...
just voice characters.
It had a couple of funny things, but it's just not worth it all the way through. And one movie you've probably never heard of. It was directed by David Schwimmer from Friends.
Oh, I've heard of it.
Trust, which is about there's a 13-year-old girl and she starts a relationship. I don't know if it's online or texting or both with a guy, and he ends up being like way, 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 way older. So, you know, he starts off by sending her pictures saying I'm 18, and then all of a sudden she finds out he's 20, and then he's 25, and then he ends up being probably in his late 30s or whatever in it. And it's just, it kind of makes you think about how, you know, we didn't grow up when we were in high school, at least I didn't, I don't think you guys did, with having that instant, you know, you had to actually call somebody on the phone.
Right.
Right? You had to go through that, okay, I'm going to talk to you, but now you can, texting and all that, it's very different.
Yeah.
Right? So I thought it was an interesting take on the whole deal.
Yeah. Does it mean to push an important message?
No, it just makes you think about how, you know, you guys all have kids. Are you going to check their messages? Are you going to look at what they're saying, where they're going? What are they looking at?
Oh, they're going to be locked in the closet.
Yeah,
they're
exactly.
Not going anywhere,
they're not going
actually.
Anywhere. They're not, there's no,
yeah.
Exactly.
No,
but I think it's a challenge, and it makes you think about how you're going to deal with it.
It is. Yeah, I got a neighbor that they have an 8-year-old that's same, and they have a phone. And they don't monitor it. And he's like, dude, where's your phone? I'm like, well,
Right.
Not paying for that phone. Yeah. Why would he need a phone?
What's really funny is when I was into network security, and I still sort of am, but I was like, I was already preparing. I was like, okay, I'm going to run, you know, this thing behind the scenes on my computer, on my daughter's computer, so yeah. I can see everything she's typing. But it's like, technology has already changed yeah. since then. And so now I'm just like, I might as well just not plan until we get to that
there.
Stage because everything is going to be different by then. I mean, right. you know, no one's really chatting in chat rooms online.
But your daughter's very young. I mean, there's people obviously that have kids right on the cusp, right?
12, yeah, 13, absolutely.
14. At what point do you trust them versus I got to check out what you're doing?
Yeah. And then there's also like you want them to have a phone because you want yeah. to be able to, you know, for them to call you if there's right. an emergency or things like that. So it's like, do you just restrict texting or what? You know,
I guess that brings up the question I always ask. I always present to my wife when it's a matter of technology and how you deal with that. I ask, well, what did they do back in the 1800s? Parenting and all those tactics were still in play, but so not having a phone and communicating. Well,
no, you can't take the Pony Express and go see Joey.
But really, I mean, what do they do even just as soon as 10, 15
what
years
if, what if the carrier pigeon what? Flies in with a note that says you're hot? I mean, what yeah. do you do then?
I don't
how do you yeah. respond?
Exactly.
I think it's a completely different challenge.
I guess I deal with it more philosophically yeah, exactly. rather than kind of microly with the specific technology at play and dealing with that and more of a you know.
You bring up a great point, like education kind of from the beginning.
Yeah.
I think is probably the most important.
But yeah. people are always
even
curious.
Even at a young age.
They're always curious, though.
That's
and
true.
And when someone can get to someone you care about easier than they could before,
mm-hmm.
you know,
sure.
it's
yeah.
different.
Yeah.
No, I get that.
Yeah, it's
we should have a parenting podcast.
We should.
Yeah.
Yes. And
duct tape.
Anyway, as a movie itself, I thought I would give it maybe a B minus. It was interesting. I think it's worth seeing. It's not a great movie, but mm-hmm. you know, the girl that plays the 14-year-old gives a really good performance. I do not know her name.
Jennifer Aniston.
14, not 40.
Oh, the other four.
And Clive Owen is in it.
He's awesome.
He plays the dad, right?
Yeah, he plays nice. The dad. And it's interesting because he has a job that kind of, it's an advertising and it kind of sells, you know.
Sex to everybody.
I don't want to say, yeah.
Oh.
Maybe sexual imagery.
Oh, sure, yeah.
And he's kind of in a dilemma, right? He's kind of like, well, this is what I do for a living, but.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's affecting yeah. his family and his daughter, and it's pretty good.
No, you can't wear hot pink.
You got to give Ross from Friends sense. Some yeah. props for, yeah, it's better than what Chandler Bing did. Anyway. and then the last thing I want to talk about is everyone knows just came out that plays games at all is Gears of War 3.
Mm.
Just came out, got it a few days ago. So far, I've only played through probably a fifth of the game. Only in campaign mode, and it's a good game. It's a good time.
Mm-hmm. You know? How is it different from the other games?
Well, I think it looks a little bit better. Performance-wise, it's very similar. And it's interesting because I don't know that, and I heard someone else say this, that it's really going to generate people who don't like the series already to want to jump into it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's cool. I mean, the games are fun. They're challenging. And I love the co-op part of it. You know, I like to just play by myself, but it's, you know, when you play with a friend, it's fun, you know, and this one has up to 4-person campaign mode on Xbox Live, and it's kind of cool, you know.
Is it just on Xbox, or is it?
No, it is just it's on
just
Xbox.
Xbox. Exclusive.
Yeah.
Because it's Microsoft
yeah.
Studios.
Okay.
It.
Yeah.
Game
Studios. Well, Epic.
343.
And then Microsoft. Epic and Microsoft. I'm not sure. I think Epic developed it, and I'm
okay.
not sure
right.
which stage Microsoft.
Sure, sure.
Okay. Second party game.
Yep.
But the only thing I've noticed in the game itself is that they seem to be heavily into the story, which it's probably good, but I can't say I've paid super close attention because when you're ready to just rock out and shoot things with the controller, you don't want to watch a 2-minute movie
yeah.
of the relationship That's, of the pop and mm-hmm. you know, his boy or whatever. And there's a few too many of those at the beginning for me. So far, so good. We'll see. I'll follow up next time. It's a good time. I thought the first two Gears are two of my favorite games ever. So
nice.
So one interesting question. Why do you prefer Gears of War over Halo?
Good question.
I think it's a little more raw. I think it's grittier. Halo, to me, started off it was amazing. And I had just gotten back into playing console games, and it completely took me away, and it was eerie and freaky and all that. And then, although the follow-ups were good, I never recaptured that. And Gears it's got a grittiness to it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not all decked out in their super sleek armor. They're like down and dirty and chainsawing things.
Right. Yeah. There's a chainsaw on the gun.
On the gun. Oh,
so
yeah.
When you get up close and personal.
Close contact.
Yep. Saw them in half. I mean, it's engineered really well, too. I mean, the gameplay is just fantastic. So it's a fun time.
Cool. Mm. Cool. All right. Well, thank you very much. I think that does it for us today on Cam Fu and Friends. I'd like to thank my guest hosts for being here today, Andrew, Brad, Dano. Thank you so much.
You.
It's been a real pleasure. Hope you guys
go to the hunt
sometime.
Go.
Oh, well, I was going to say, visit the website so you can participate in our trivia contest, and also visit the Stalker Farms website, which is just stalkerfarms.com. That's stalker, like a stalker, like someone stalking someone.
So S-T-O-C-K-E?
No, it's
S-T-A-L?
www.stalkerfarms.com.
Stalker.
Check out their website. Very cool. They do trailers. To kind of get you pumped up for the hunt. Check those out. They're awesome. And
wear a diaper. So crap yourself.
Is it scary?
Drop it to the side.
Depends.
Dano, did you want to let people know where people can find you on Twitter?
Yeah, you know, I run a couple Twitter accounts, but my personal one is the Minds of Orm, the M-I-N-E-S of Orm, O-R-M-E. I usually tweet and talk about and find things about Netflix movies.
You're a pretty frequent tweeter.
I'm frequent less right now. This last month, I've been pretty slow on that one. But usually, things about movies, the movie industry, film, that type of stuff. Xbox, Kinect, anything geeky. And I usually follow like the Guild and Film Drunk and Collider and those type of things. My alter ego is All Horror. That's double R. yeah, darn it.
You sell your services on Twitter.
And that's Stalker Farms, S-T-A-L-K-E-R-F-A-R-M-S. That's all Seattle-based stuff, EMPSF, the EMP, Science Fiction Museum, ZombieCon. Retweet a lot of stuff about films that are horror-related, so I follow BD Disgusting and horror film news and all that type of stuff. So that's very horror-centric. That actually... I tweet every day, and good grief, that's a lot of retweets, and it's pretty crazy, so, especially now.
All right.
And you can also find us on Facebook. Yeah, nice. And so Stalker Farms is on Facebook, facebook.com/StalkerFarms.
Very cool, thank you. And you can find more about me on my website at cam-foo.com. I review every movie I see on there, so other movies I didn't talk about today, The Help, Crazy Stupid Love, and Cold Weather. Oh, Cold Weather, by the way, a movie based in Portland. Fantastic little independent film if you get the chance to watch that. If you're enjoying the podcast, feel free to share it with others. You can comment anywhere on the timeline of this podcast if you're listening on the embedded player on our website, or you can comment in our comment section. And like I said, the trivia contest is there. We also have our Facebook page, which you can like us on. And if you are a tweeter, you can find us at twitter.com/camfooandfriends. All one word. You can also subscribe to us through iTunes if you haven't already. Additional big thank yous to Ryan, as always, for making the show. Last but not least, thank you, the listeners, for tuning in today. We hope you enjoyed
all
the show.
All four of you.
We are out
Cameron's
here.
Cameron's mom, Cameron's dad, Cameron's wife, and Cameron's daughter.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
We're out.
And the other 10,000.
We're out. Okay, we're done. Bye.
Love you, bye.